I now call this special meeting of Amherstburg Town Council to order. Is there any disclosure of pecuniary interest? Okay, seeing none, we will go to item three, policy review and approval.
I'll just say, sir.
Councilman Lott?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. These three policies also are all an enhancement of a previous policy, or is any one of these new?
Through your worship to Councilor Melosh, two of the policies are required under Section 270 of the Municipal Act, that being the accountability and transparency policy. The last time it was reviewed and approved by council was November 26, 2007. So it's actually 9 years old. So one of our obligations and requirements under the Municipal Act is to review and maintain. So I would look at this one as an actual maintenance. And there has been some changes, minor, with regards to the accountability and transparency policy. The other one required under Section 270 of the Municipal Act is the delegation of powers and authorities. That was last reviewed also on November 26, 2007, so it's been some time. The previous council did not review any of these policies or look at maintaining them to address them. The third one being the code of conduct. That's a policy that's required under Section 223 of the Municipal Act, and that's a policy that governs the code of conduct for council. So that was last reviewed as well in December on December 10th of 2007. Well, in addition to that, I just want to provide the comments that all three policies were actually reviewed by our integrity commissioner as well as part of the review process.
My only concern with especially the code of conduct one in reading through some of that is I guess the teeth behind you shall not do this and you shall not do that, but case in point, I just reading through one area where if you're representing the town, you have to act, and then of course not consume too much alcohol, but I think we've all probably been at an event where somebody's gotten a little loud and obnoxious, okay, and whether he's a politician or just a member of, the public. My concern is unless he does something, unless there's something that's criminal in nature, I guess, I mean, what can the integrity commissioner really do, I guess, or how can that kind of conduct be reined in, I guess?
Through your worship to Councilor Melosh, ultimately you are an elected official. You do represent the town. Members of the general public typically hold council members in high regard. So you are representing the town, and I think it's appropriate that the town, at least in its policies, provide some guiding principles. Ultimately, it's a personal decision that you're going to make if you're going to overconsume alcohol or not. There are some criminal situations that could happen if you were to drive and things of that nature. So I think it's just a policy that, and it's put in writing to sort of remind council of their duties and their responsibilities. I don't think there's anything other than that we can add. You were, as elected officials, you'll be held accountable every 4 years by your constituents. So
that's correct.
It's your own decision, but we're just providing some background on what we think you should be doing.
Okay. One further point. Mm-hmm. In the gifts and benefits, how does tickets to events, if somebody, an organization gives me tickets to attend an event, how does that fit into the criteria of gifts? Am I allowed to accept them or not accept them under this criteria?
Under 300, right?
There is two areas in this policy, 6.11.4. Basically, if the value of the gift or benefit exceeds $300 during the course of a calendar year, the council member shall file within 30 days receipt of the gift or benefit reaching the annual limit disclosure statement with the clerk. So basically, it'll fall under that category. Furthermore, there is under section 6.11.6 that no council member shall accept a gift or benefit worth in excess of $500. Mm-hmm. So you have the $300 limit total value from one source, mm-hmm. and then you should never accept anything that's greater than $500.
Thank you.
Councillor Courtney?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Is this the time that you want typos or not?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sure.
Okay. The first one that I have is a question. Okay, it's on page 12 of 25.
Which policy?
Policy 2, Code of Conduct.
Okay.
And it's under 6.14.3. No council member shall undertake campaign-related activities on municipal property during regular staff working hours. Does that mean that after 4:30, somebody who's campaigning could stand on the front lawn of the municipal building and campaign?
Through your worship, my read of that is if you were to have a press conference after town hall was closed, that would be something that may be permitted, but not during working hours and not within the town hall.
But I'm saying after working hours.
This is what's here. If council wishes to remove it, it's totally up to council's discretion.
Should we include at any time?
To the will of council. These are council approved policies, so whatever council wishes to do.
I think it should be at any time. That's my opinion.
Okay. Well, folks, you're the decision makers. So.
I believe the Elections Act says that you can't do it at any time. And so we can just change it to say at any time because it's just going to reflect what the Elections Act says anyway.
Okay. So we'll make those changes.
Sure.
Okay. The next I have is page 15 of 25, and it's under item 7.3.3.2, item B1. I think the word is supposed to be complaint, if the complaint on its face is an allegation of criminal, because in the next one it says if a complaint on its face. So I'm assuming that should be complaint instead of yes.
Okay.
All right, page 16 of 25. The word may be right, but it doesn't strike me as being right. Item 7.3.4.1 will go to the referral of a matter is frivolous, vexatious, or not made in good faith, or that there are no grounds for insufficient grounds. Should that be for or of? They've got of.
I think you had too many grounds in there. Isn't it just supposed to be that there are no grounds? Or
that
there are insufficient
grounds.
So you take out no grounds of.
What does council wish to do?
So it should say, or that there are insufficient grounds for an investigation.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Okay. May I go on?
Yes.
Okay, page 17 of 25. Again, in two places, item 7.3.5.2b, the word compliant is there. I believe it should be complaint. And down to 7.3.6.2, the same word compliant, I believe it should be complaint. Okay, the next one is 18 of 25. Up at the top, it should be 10 instead of 10. If I'm correct. And the last one, 20 of 25. I just got a number from that. Okay, item 7.312, again, the word compliant, and I believe should be complaint. Okay, got it?
Got it.
Okay, all right, that's it.
Councilor Puja?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So which one are we dealing with right now? Will we continue with?
There's no motions on the floor, and we have just been addressing all of them at once.
Okay, so are we starting with number one, accountability and transparency?
If you would.
Okay. So if the clerk would be so kind to relay to the public if there's any major changes on here, Paula, that, so that they will know what we're referring to.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The only red line change from the last draft that was provided to council in November, this was the last time it was deferred, was a red line change to the definition of clerk. It was the addition of which includes the roles and responsibilities as laid out in section 228 of the Municipal Act. That's all that was there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you for that, Paula. I know that, I'm not sure if this is the right form to bring this up in, and I know that accountability and transparency, where does it state that all committee meetings must be recorded? Because for the reason for this is our Parks Committee had a problem with it, and I was embarrassed. I didn't recall us really specifying that, and so I said I would bring it to council's attention. And the reason for that is because they felt that it stifles discussion, because a lot of times we discuss really in depth before we make a motion or anything, and the motions are always recorded, but they just felt that they felt uncomfortable dealing with everything being recorded.
Mm-hmm. Through you, Mr. Mayor, that is actually dealt with in the procedural bylaw. All procedures are governed, council and committees are governed by the procedural bylaw, and it is states in there that those meetings are audio recorded.
Including the committee
meetings? That's correct.
With accountability and transparency, I'm just concerned with article number 8.1, the procedures. Okay, the administration has the authority to establish procedures for implementing this policy and to amend those procedures as required in the best interest of the town with the concurrence of the CAO and town solicitor if required. I know that council has discussed this almost every policy that we've had, and I think that we said that we were very concerned with the fact that we wanted it to be added and as approved by council. Does anybody recollect us discussing that over and over again with our policies? As it states right there, it would only be administration that has the authority to establish procedures for implementing this policy and to amend those procedures with the concurrence of the CAO and town solicitor. It does not state and approved by council.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, with respect to that section 8, in the policy that we're discussing, delegation of powers and duties, the last discussion that council had regarding that policy, it was stricken from the policy. So it was asked, you asked for it to be removed in whole.
That's for what to be removed.
The procedures.
The whole procedure section?
That's correct.
So why is it up there?
No, this, in the delegation of, not in the accountability and transparency one, but in the delegation of powers and duties. I'm just, your last discussion around the delegation of powers and duties policy, you asked for it to be removed. So if you'd like to do that with this policy, we can do the same.
So then number 8.1 would be removed altogether, and it would be the duties of council if there was any changes, that it would come to council, correct? And you're saying that in the others, when we had concerns about it, we asked for the procedures to be deleted.
Yes, that's good.
If a policy doesn't refer to administration's obligation to develop the procedures, what is there that says that anyone has to do anything to follow this policy? Yeah?
Up there, number 8.1 is to amend the procedures without council's input. That's exactly what that states.
Yeah, but that's the procedures, not the policy. The policies, when we decide on the policies and everything that is required in the administration of the town, then it's up to administration to go deal with that. And the way I read this, it just says, well, they're going to figure that out and they're going to implement it. And they cannot implement anything outside of what we've already agreed is the policy. Mm-hmm. So I don't see that they're doing anything outside of what we've already agreed to anyway, unless, like, the procedures are going to be the management of the town. Yeah?
I understand what you're saying, but in this case, as it was in the past, we had that section removed because we were very concerned about that. There's procedures and policies. Some of the procedures could be taken differently, could be interpreted differently from the way we have it written up in our policies. It's very, very important that council is on top of that, and that someone can't come along and make a decision that could change the meaning of the intent of council.
Councilor Malosh?
I guess I would have to somewhat agree with what the mayor just spoke about, is that if we set the policy, it's then administration that sets the procedures on administrating the in the administration of the policy, I guess. It's not us to sort of all of a sudden, you know, cross the T's and dot the I's. That's, I guess, administration. We set the framework, I guess. So that's what I sense agree. I agree with what the mayor is indicating. I'm not sure the concern, I guess, more than if we establish the policy and approve the policy, I don't know really, do we really want to get involved in procedures to manage the policy, we'll say, I guess.
Councilor Boucher?
Thank you. Council had this discussion when all of council was present, and most of council had a problem with it, and that's why the procedure section was removed from the other policies.
Okay, well, there's still no motions before us. Is there any other issues with the policies that you wanted to raise? Councilor Courtney?
Thank you. I have a question that I'm curious about under confidential information. So it'll be page 10 of 25, item 612-2. Information of a corporate, commercial, scientific, or technical nature. Can somebody give me an idea what a scientific question would be that would be confidential information?
6.1.2.2.
An example might be for, let's say, something comes to us from the Amherstburg Land Holdings, that's private and confidential one. The technical remedy situation that they have to do there, they might share that information confidentially with council, but not in the way they actually are doing the remedy, but is not going to be shared with the general public. I don't know, that might be an example that I'm just thinking of. That's scientific in nature. I don't know if the engineers in the room can help me out with that, Mark or Antoinette.
Well, again, through your mayor, you could be meeting with anybody, a business that has a way of doing something that involves a chemical reaction, and they're excited and they're talking to you about it, but that's proprietary. That's confidential information. There's the formula for Coca-Cola is a very classic example. The Coke Classic formula is a perfect example. Formulas that are used all the time by businesses that are proprietary that other businesses would see value from. You can look under scientific. There also has a commercial aspect to it, but all of those things would have confidential quality to it. The test for confidential information really comes down to the business nature of it and the fact that they have not released it publicly. And if you're exposed to that information by virtue of your role here, it would be the test under confidential information.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Through you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to add to that with respect to this confidential information section. It is important for council to note that this information is protected under MFIPA as well. And Bill 8, Schedule 5 has changed and amended MFIPA to include personal liability with respect to personal confidential information. If someone leaks confidential information, you may be held personally responsible, and there is a $5,000 fee.
Councilor Pooja?
Regarding the Code of Conduct, policy statement, item 1-2, I thought it was 1-2. I might be wrong. Okay, the town commits to appoint, thank you, Jonathan. The town commits to appointing an integrity commissioner to examine whether a member of town, of council committee, or whatever. So that's the one I'm referring to. Does this mean that the CAO is no longer responsible to send out code of conduct letters as he has done in the past?
Through your worship, that is the way I read this, is that the integrity commissioner is responsible to examine them. However, with regards to putting people on notice that they may have violated the code of conduct, I believe still falls within my purview.
Okay. So if someone, for example, has already received two codes of conduct, and so then could you continue with the third code of conduct if it's required, or would that have to go to the integrity commissioner?
The integrity commissioner typically will investigate code of conduct violations when there's actually a code of conduct violation submission to the clerk, and the appropriate fee is provided. Once again, I believe that within my purview of the CAL, knowing the code of conduct, if I were to see an individual that's violated the code of conduct of the town and I was to put them on notice, I think that's, once again, within the purview of the CAO to do that for the town. Ultimately, the removal of an individual from a committee would be in consultation with council. I could not remove a council member if they violated the code of conduct. Mm-hmm. Only council could, no one could do that, really. The integrity commissioner would be able to conduct the investigation and advise council that someone has violated the code of conduct, and it's up to council as a collective to make the determination of what that, how they would handle that. So more so for committees, not council.
I could, I think I found what I was looking for. 7.2.1 says that if someone feels that there's been a violation, the first step is to notify the individual of the contravention of the policy or what is believed to be the contravention of the policy. And I believe that's what the CAO would be doing in providing that notice, is letting the individual know that it is believed they violated the code of conduct. Yep.
And I reviewed all of this, but I wasn't able to find it exactly. So how many codes of conduct letters does one receive before the council can decide to remove that person from a committee or a board? Like, is it on the third one, or they get three letters and then it's four strikes and you're out?
Sorry, through you, Mr. Mayor, if you'll bear with me for one moment, I'm just going to bring up the local boards and committees terms of reference. In the conduct section of the terms of reference, it says the code of conduct applies to boards and committee volunteers and will be strictly enforced. The clerk and or the CAO at the direction of council shall dismiss a member in violation of this committee or board member code of conduct after two clear violations have been served on the violating member.
So if somebody already has two codes of conduct, like, should that come before us? Or is it on the third violation?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, it would be on their third violation. So after two clear violations, we would bring the very next one to you for your consideration.
Okay. And further to that, should that be included in the code of conduct? Or is that just part of the terms of reference for all board members and council and committee members?
through you, Mr. Mayor. The council approved terms of reference for local boards and committees that was approved in October of 2015. That includes a code of conduct for committee members, so they have their own code of conduct. This code of conduct is strictly for members of council.
Yep.
And thank you for that, Paula, but it does say that it refers several times in here through to council and to member and council and committee and board members throughout this code of conduct.
I agree with you, Councillor, but I believe it's with regards to code of conduct where there is an integrity commissioner complaint that's been filed. If there is no integrity commissioner complaint that is filed, then my belief would be that we continue to manage local boards and committees under the terms of reference from our boards and committees policy.
Yes.
Yes. So does this include when we're stating boards and committees and it's in their policy? Does it include just like our boards and committees, or does it include the police services board that we appointed people? Because we did appoint people on the police services board.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the police services board has their own terms of reference that they are bound by.
However, just further than that, there's nothing that would prevent an individual from filing with the integrity commissioner with regards to code of conduct violation.
So who would deal with that if the integrity commissioner came back with a finding of a violation of the code of conduct? Would it be the police services board that would attend to that, or would it be council because we appointed that person?
My understanding is the police services board are regulated under another act, so I'm not 100% sure with regards to the procedure to file a code of conduct violation under the police services board. I don't know if Council Levine might be familiar, but they have their own legislation, and any violation needs to be reported to that body. That's outside the purview of this council.
Mm-hmm. Through you, Mr. Mayor. We do have our own code of conduct in terms of reference, and any violations would need to go through, I believe, probably brought to the chief's attention, and he would bring it to the board's attention.
Just further clarification, and not to put Council Levine or Mayor DiCarlo on the spot, but if they did something at a police services board meeting, they're still members of council, so they could be investigated through the integrity commissioner. Any board member that is member of a board and only has done something, for example, if you're concerned about something that's happened at the police services board, that falls into that jurisdiction. These gentlemen, because they cross both bodies, they still, they are held accountable to the integrity commissioner of this council, unfortunately. Sorry, but that's you guys are screwed.
Yeah.
So I think this is very, very important, and I'm asking through you, Mayor DiCarlo, if I could request the clerk to answer this question. I believe this was part of our previous code of conduct, but it's 6.10.2. And it states, any member of council confronted with or aware of harassment of any nature will report said harassment to mayor and CAO. Mm-hmm. But that was included in our previous correct, for previous code of conduct?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, yes, you are correct.
So in other words, council, and I can't speak to it directly, but council really was doing the right thing when we acted previously on a concern.
Councilor Lodge?
So I understand between the informal complaint versus a formal complaint, is it only the formal complaint that goes to the integrity commissioner, or is the informal handled internally? Is that, how do you differentiate what gets investigated externally versus internally?
That is up to the complainant. I believe it says in the policies there, the ideal process is obviously to work through it, and that's why you should let the person know first. Hopefully you can resolve the issue in an informal manner, but if the affected people are not satisfied, either the complainant can go to the integrity officer, commissioner, or they could go directly to the commissioner if they feel it's warranted.
So a member of the public could file a complaint with John, or he could file a complaint direct with the integrity commissioner?
If a member of the public had an issue with any member of council, hopefully they would let me know so that we can address it amicably. But if for some reason there was any issues outstanding, or a member of the public felt that it was not addressed appropriately, then it would become a formal complaint, I guess, in that respect.
Further to that, Councilor Walsh, it is identified in 7.2.2 of the policy that individuals or organizations are encouraged to initially pursue the informal complaint process as a means of stopping or remedying a behavior. So that's what we're trying to encourage, but it's, as the mayor indicated, it's up to the individual if they want to pursue that or not.
I guess my point is that if it, I guess it could go for informal and then end up in the commissioner's hands anyway. But it would become, I guess it would have to be formalized through some kind of a fee and everything. Okay. That's okay.
Councilor Gordon?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have two things to ask. If I understood correctly, it said that each of the committees that we have, such as the Heritage and the Parks and whatever, have their own frame of reference for code of conduct.
I believe Paula indicated that we have a terms of reference for our committees, and within the terms of reference that council approved is a code of conduct that's defined within them.
But their own. So it's a code of conduct that they come up with?
No, they didn't come up with that. Council approved it, and once council approved the policy, it was a council approved code of conduct that they must adhere to.
Okay, so they would be held accountable the same way as a council member would, like 2-3 strikes and you're out, or?
I can't put 2 or 3 strikes on council. I could put 2 or 3 strikes on a committee member with council's agreement and your own.
Okay. And the second question I have, under code of conduct, on page 1 of 25, item 1-2, the town commits to appointing an integrity commissioner. Okay, so that to me means we're gonna do it. Okay, then when you go to page 4 of 25, 611, if the town may appoint an integrity commissioner. So either we do it or we might do it.
Well, that's just for the complaint part. So we have to appoint an integrity commissioner to be available, but then when it comes to an actual complaint, we have the option to appoint them for the complaint or perhaps deal with it informally.
Gotcha.
At least that's the way I read it.
Thank you.
Councilor Melange?
I would like to put a motion forth now that these policies, the delegation of powers and duties, the accountability and transparency, and the code of conduct for members of council be approved as presented, subject to the various minor changes that have been presented, the request.
Is there a second? We can still discuss it, Councilor Levine, yeah? And further questions, Councilor Pugin?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Regarding delegations and powers and duties, I think it's 6.12. This is delegations of powers and duties.
That's page 34. Yeah, 34. There you go.
Okay, I just went quiet. 6.12. I think we have to go up a bit more. Okay.
Right there. No?
No.
Page 34.
Down
just a bit.
Just after drainage. Okay. Street closures or temporary street closures and or detours due to construction or specific events in accordance with the Public Events Committee's Public Events Manual. I thought that was going to come back to council.
It does. But once we've approved an event and the street closures, then it's up to administration to follow through with that process or not. If council didn't approve it, then obviously that would be an issue. The only time I can see something like that happening without council's oversight, I guess, might be construction, safety. If a road needs to be closed for repairs, I don't think that's something that needs to come back to council.
Yeah. I agree with you, but it says or
special events. And that is something that I think that council wanted to come back to us, the special events part.
Doesn't the manual say it has to come back to council?
Sorry?
Doesn't the manual say it has to come back to council?
The special events policy does.
Yes.
Well, the special events policy does have to come back
yeah.
to council, but council passed a motion that council had to approve every event prior to actually being able to conduct an event in the town of Amherstburg. So this may be redundant in what it's actually saying, because as council knows, they did pass a motion wanting to see every event come to council, and that's the method which administration has been moving forward with.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that, and I appreciate that, but it seems like it's a conflicting statement. In one policy, we have something that it has to come back to council, and here we're giving permission for administration and appointed staff the authority to process, decide upon, and execute agreements for the following matters. And it says, or special events, in accordance with the Public Events Committee's Public Events Manual.
Does the manual have the policy?
If I could, Your Worship. Through your worship to Councillor Pugin, this policy, the intent of this policy is to be reviewed every 5 years. The motion that was passed by this council was to have each event come before council requiring the event to be approved. Not to say that that would be a continued practice of the next council. However, if the next council moved to not adopting or approving every event, this policy would then allow us to move forward in the street closures. However, this council's motion that stands right now is the one that supersedes this policy, that being every event comes to council prior to any approval. Because we won't be reviewing this policy for another 5 years.
Councilor Rain?
So if I might, these policies are just the framework that we're required to have.
Mm-hmm.
Any motions that we've passed previously, including the one on special events, mm-hmm. road closures, supersedes this stuff.
Okay.
This is so that going forward, the next council doesn't have to sit through 1,700 hours of policy reviews and do them all over again, right?
Hopefully not.
Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. And all policies work with other policies. And that's why in this one where it says, in accordance with the Public Events Committee's Public Events Manual, which we've already said has to come back to council, obviously it will flow then that all that stuff has to be approved by council before this even makes sense. And if it hasn't, then obviously council can refer the event back to the council meeting to be dealt with accordingly.
Number 6.2.15 regarding delegations of powers and duties. So it states authority granted to the chief administrative officer to consider and approve of requests for waiver of fees as noted in the town's user fee bylaw, limited to fees not exceeding $1,000 per request. At our last meeting, we had someone come before us and was requesting a waiver of fees up to $1,000. Does this mean to say that the CAO has the right to waive those fees, or is it council that must waive the fees? Do you see why I'm confused? Because you talked about possibility of waiving $700 of the $1,000 fees or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Here it says that we are giving administration permission to waive the fees. Who is actually responsible for that?
Council ultimately has the authority to waive the fees. This delegation of authority would only occur if in the operating budget there was an actual line item that allowed me the authority through the budget, because that is the guiding document that I would use in administration. So if there was a waiver of fees line item that was approved by council in our operating budget, that would allow me to do that. Without the operating budget to support this recommendation, only council can do that. And we presently don't have any waiver of fees in any of our operating documents.
I was going to ask for an example of it.
We do not have it. Based on what I've asked the treasurer to do going forward, based on the fees that council is waiving, we're going to try and keep track of it so that when we prepare next year's budget, council will know the total value of the fees that were waived in 2016, and we'll be looking for approval from council to track that and report it out. So you'll be seeing it in our variance reporting going forward. Because they are revenues that are recognized in our operating budget that will not be captured.
Councilor Courtney?
Thank you. One more typo and then I have to leave. I have to go to work, to go teach. In the last policy, Paula, page 7 of 10, item 6.2.2.1, there's two B's in there. You only want bylaws, you don't want two B's. Okay? And on that note, I beg everybody's indulgence, but I have to leave. We still have four on me, right?
Mm-hmm. Councilor Pollution?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. According to number 6.220, authority for the chief admin, and it, Jonathan, sorry, it's still with delegations of powers and duties.
6.2.2.0.
6.2.20.
It's right there at the top of the page.
Sorry.
Right.
authority for the chief administrative officer to waive the provisions of the business licensing bylaw for special events upon approval of the manager of licensing and enforcement. Again, that's it doesn't state that this has anything to do with council. Is this just another thing that falls under the same guideline that Councilor Levine is referring to?
Yes, and once again, furthermore, if it's a line item with a budget component, if council doesn't approve the budget, they don't have the authority. Right? So council needs to recognize the primary document for a lot of the things that grant me the authority to waive any fee structure has to be approved in an operating budget. If it's not in the budget, I have to bring it back to council for council to grant me the authority, because my authorities get established from the budget, which council approves.
I'm more confused than I was before.
I think I have to, I can't stress enough to you, Councillor Pouget, it's from a municipality's perspective, those values that are approved in an operating budget are, from an administrative perspective, give us the authority when it comes to expenditures and revenues to move forward. If they're not captured in the operating budget, then that means we have to come back to council to get, they're an exception. We have to come back to you.
Okay. So,
I promise this is it. It just a point of clarification. Councilor Melange made a motion to approve everything that had already been discussed, and I don't want to put, if you could read back the motion, Paula, I'm sorry.
The motion on the floor is that all policies be approved as presented, subject to the minor amendments.
So, for the minor amendments, did that include the elimination of the paragraph concerning procedures with accounting and transparency?
That's up to you. There was no motion on the floor, so it is your motion to clarify.
Oh. I basically put the motion forth as the document is written, not removing it. I do have a bit of concern with respect to how that's worded. And I have no problem, again, I as I said earlier, I want to see councils, you know, stay within the, what we call the policy approval and not get into procedures. And so for that purposes, I would agree to leave that there, simply on the fact that we are the policy makers or deciders, and the procedures are to be done by administration. So that was my approach.
Mm-hmm. Councilor Pouget?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Could we vote on these individually then?
All of them, or perhaps
three.
Just that? Oh, that clause in each of the three policies, is that what you're saying?
Correct.
I would need agreement on that. Councilor Malash?
I'm sorry, can you
repeat? The question is, can we deal with the motion without that clause in each of the policies and then vote on those individually?
Point of clarification, isn't it just in that one? Procedures, isn't it just in that one? That's
just
it,
one
because
policy.
It was removed in all the others.
Yeah. So I believe it's just that one policy.
Follow-up question. Paula, in the Municipal Act, refers to our, you know, role of council as policy. It talks about policy. Does it talk about procedures?
On the spot, Johnny.
Well,
I didn't bring mine with me.
I have the Municipal Act here. The Municipal Act talks about council's overarching responsibility of approving the policy, and the procedure or the advice from administration is council is responsible to direct administration on how to, which policy to approve, but it's up to administration to develop the procedures in which to do it. It's sort of, I'll refer to it to the Board of Governors, right? Council is the Board of Governors, and they're responsible for setting the strategic vision or businesses in which the town wishes to get into, but the actual framework on how to actually, you know, for example, if we're building a bridge, council's decision is let's build a bridge, but council doesn't get into are we going to use 12M rebar, which is part of the procedure part. That usually is left up to the professionals and administration. So, Mr. Galvin, I don't know if you can
read it right here if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Section 224, the role of council to represent the public and consider the well-being interests of the municipality, to develop and evaluate the policies and programs of the municipality, to determine which services the municipality provides, to ensure that administrative policies, practices, and procedures, and controllership policies, practices, and procedures are in place to implement the decisions of council. So it kind of puts the procedures on those too.
But it says to ensure that they're in place, I guess, so is the word. if council wishes, we can set it aside. The request was to set it aside. Is that what the request is?
Would be to vote on it separately.
To vote on what separately? Vote
whether
on
we should include that clause. The concern for me is that if we start including it now and we haven't up to now, I'm more concerned about being consistent at this point than I am in trying to interpret that without a specific example. I think we already agree on how we're proceeding anyway, but if council has already removed that in other policies, I think it we either have to put it back or we have to continue to leave it out. But that's just my opinion.
And we've removed it from most of the policies we've reviewed so far?
That is correct.
Okay. I will agree to remove it.
So that's in with the minor amendments?
Yes.
Okay.
So that would include all amendments. And I don't believe we need to separate it anymore. Correct? Okay. Any other? It was more of a clarification of understanding. Unless there's any other questions or comments, seeing none, all those in favor? Carried. Is there any other business? No other business?
Yes, there is.
Oh. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Something that I omitted last meeting as we were discussing other things. I was invited to a meeting from an interest point of view at the McGregor Clinic, with respect to McGregor Clinic, the Harrell office, we'll say, that oversees the McGregor Clinic, had a meeting with the Essex people, our people were actually were invited as well, Mr. Russo and Mr. Gavin that attended. So I attended from an interest point of view of what was going on. So it was positive. That what came out of it was very positive, and it had to do with funding from the government. The government will give funding to Harrell for a RPN, but no administrative staff, and it's difficult to run an office with no administrative staff. So I guess in the final decision of all of that is that Taras Nedeshak was pretty confident that he could get that funding through his sources for the McGregor Clinic, I think we're talking about $45,000 a year to get that, so that we can keep that clinic open, because it serves you know, large part of, you know, our, you know, municipality as well as Essex. So anyway, my motion is that we send a joint letter of support with the town of Essex to Rasnatashek and to the Ministry of Health and Welfare.
So that would be direction?
Direction.
Okay. Any other clarification? Okay. Is there any questions? Councillor Pooja?
Actually, I have two questions. Mm-hmm. Why wasn't council invited to this? Did they just pick and choose who they want to attend these meetings? And a second part of it is, how can we vote on something when we don't have anything in front of us to vote on?
Is there a cost to council?
No. This is Mr. Nashak was going to, through his sources, and to request the $45,000 per year for the next 3 years on his contract. As I understand it, Mr. Russo might be able to help a little bit here.
I'll try to capture the framework on this one. If you recall back at budget time, the McGregor Healthcare Clinic came to council and asked for some funding support. Obviously, they also went to the municipality of Essex. The decision was that at that time we could offer no funding support for their administrative staff. So in conjunction with the municipality of Essex taking the lead on it, they have been working to try to find a remedy to get funding from the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care to help keep that clinic open. The ministry's year end is March 31st, and all funding submissions have to happen before that. So Essex was primarily the lead on conversing with the Member of Parliament, and it became a very time-sensitive matter. So they had asked the representatives from the town to attend this meeting with the MP to see what solutions he could bring, and Mr. Nashak indicated that he would go to the minister himself actually last week and have a discussion about trying to get the Ministry of Health to fund this clinic. So all he was looking for from us was a letter of support with the municipality of Essex to say that, yes, we value this piece of health care in our joint municipality.
Mm-hmm.
Were you invited?
Not that I know of, no.
Okay. I have the same concerns as Councillor Pooja then. I think maybe we should have some contact with Mr. Nashak. I believe the mayor is the official spokesperson for council. I think it's a little inappropriate to go outside of the realm and pick a councillor to represent council at such an important meeting.
I wasn't there as a representative of council. I was made aware of the meeting through the deputy mayor of Essex, because he and I have had many ongoing conversations about that. So there was no.
You're speaking out of order, first of all. Second of all, I'll reiterate that the mayor is the official spokesperson for this council, and in the future, possibly we could speak to the deputy mayor of Essex and explain procedures to him. I'm sure he's already aware of how it's supposed to work. It should come to council. We can make a decision, and then the mayor could be the official spokesperson with Mr. Nashak. If we start going off on these working deals with councils on different things all over the place, it kind of puts us all at a disadvantage, in my opinion. So at this time, I'm not ready to support any of this motion going forward.
Okay. Councillor Pooja?
I concur with Councillor Levine. I can't support this motion at this time.
Okay. I don't believe then we have anything to vote on. And motion to adjourn. Councillor Melosh, Councillor Levine, all those in favor? Carried.